All right, you cowards of the cosmos. It's time to dust off your starter jackets, rip off those tearaways, and blow into your game cartridges. I'm Sam Blandford.
I'm Pat Sellers.
I'm Sean Kelly, and we wish it was the 90s. Welcome back, dear listeners. Better late than never, obviously. We certainly discussed cashing in on the online fever of a certain episode 5 of the series, but we stuck to our guns, so we're back with another episode for X-Men 97, covering episode 5, Remember It, episode 6, Life Death Part 2, and episode 7, Bright Eyes. We are Wish It Was the 90s, and you can catch us online at WIWT90S all over the place. And yeah, if for some reason you're tuning in for the first time to this, I'd recommend going back an episode and listening to the Freaks and Geeks, a real masterclass of in-depth 90s sitcom podcasting, if you ask me. I wasn't on it. Before we get started, and I'm looking for a reaction from you here, Sam, I'm just going to, and maybe a description, because obviously our listeners can't see it, I'd like to show you my early birthday present from Pat. You ready?
I can't really see your screen so pixelated.
Oh.
Looks like a comic book.
Your old dial-up setup there, Bob's not really video friendly.
Is it an action figurine?
Take a picture.
I don't know how to make my picture less pixelated.
Looks like a Scott action figurine.
I'm going to send it to you. You can edit
it. It is a one eye figurine.
V cool. Is that an X-Men 97 one?
Yeah, apparently no one wanted them. It was hard to find all the characters but one eye.
My first Cyclops figurine since I got a twin pack from a figurine series from the X-Men vs. Street Fighter arcade game, where I got a Cyclops package that came with M. Bison of Street Fighter fame.
Oh, very good.
What do you think, Sam?
Well, that's badass, especially the removable hands.
I like the removable head. The second head you clearly clip an optic blast in. So next time we record, I'll have him set up doing something. So if you're just tuning in, you've probably seen these episodes, and you're probably well aware of episode 5, Remember It, for all its infamy, but I will mention that we're going to spoil the hell out of it, because that's what we do. And that's probably never been more relevant to an episode than this, where lots happens. But just quickly, I guess as a summary, we've got two sort of stories going on here. We've got the X-Men at the mansion being interviewed by Trish Tilby about, you know, the general lives of the X-Men now that they're kind of semi-celebrities and people are accepting of mutants, doing a bit of a puff piece on them. And then at the same time, we've got Magneto and Rogue and Gambit tagging along to Genosha for their big celebration of being accepted into the United Nations. Two sort of plot points. On Genosha, things seem really good, and then some things kick off that are really bad, and we'll get into that. And on the other side, the interview with the X-Men seems to be going well. Things get very awkward for One Eye because of the situation that's unfolded with his son and his having two girlfriends, I guess, or two wives, or however you want to describe the situation with the clone, and him not really being able to handle that very well. And
he's a cuck.
It's a bit of a psychic affair going on. But I think we'll just leave it at that and maybe get into it and let the plot unfold as we discuss it, because it is some really, really good stuff. And I'm just going to kick this off with a really loaded question for you both. Is this the best X-Men episode we've seen?
Yes.
It doesn't really hold a candle. Like, this is just, sorry, other episodes don't hold a candle to this one. It energized me.
Obviously, we're somewhat fans, depending on how many episodes we've had to binge of the original series, but I think this particular episode is proof that this is actually a step up. There's a couple of reasons, I think. I think the stakes feel realer, more real.
Mm.
With the exception of the odd, you know, Morph dying in the second episode, or did he, of the original series, and, you know, a few bits and pieces going on. We talked at length about how they don't use kill or death. They talk about destroy, I'll destroy you. In this episode, lots of people get, like, lots, like potentially millions of mutants get destroyed, for lack of a better word. Right? You genuinely see mutants getting zapped by that sentinel and disintegrating, and obviously there's a couple of key deaths or are there that we'll talk about in a minute, but I just, it had genuine stakes, and like I've genuinely felt it anyway.
Yeah, I really liked this. It was quite a good split between those two stories, because I found everything that was happening, especially with that interview, which One Eye had no business fronting, was just hilarious. I kept cracking up. I don't know if anyone just kept finding the interview scene really funny. Even the interviewer was weird, the way she was talking. And I wrote down, she said, "Scott, I came here today to give the X-Men a chance to show the world that mutants are just like us, people, normal, and you lie." Why lie? I fucking lost it. That was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And then Scott just goes ballistic. Scott goes, "You're normal." And then he has his usual meltdown. I was loving all of that as well. And then Genosha was just action-packed, from the, what I'd call a Hellfire Gala type operation from the comics, through to the obviously the big action sequence at the end. It had it all. But I had one question, Bob. I'm not as familiar with Genosha from the comics, but this, like the city and everything, and possibly because of the gala thingy as well, made me think of Krakoa a lot, which is like the recent comics. Is this what Genosha was in sort of the 90s comics as well?
Sort of. Like, I think they've clearly sort of taken the best of both worlds.
Right.
You don't actually spend a lot of time in Genosha in the comics. It's more that you know about it. I have read the comic.
Is it a big, like, fancy city like that?
Yeah, it's more... Magnetoified, if that makes sense. So it's less Krakoan, which I know makes sense to you, make no sense to Sam. I guess a better way of describing Krakoa is sort of, it looks modern, but it also looks vegetated, if that makes sense. Krakoa is a living island mutant thing, and the more you feed it mutant energy, the bigger it grows. And so in the comics, the mutants end up living on it. Whereas Genosha is obviously just an island. I remember reading the comic where the X-Men have been fighting Magneto and the, you know, I don't remember if it's Valerie Cooper or someone else, but they, the, you know, powers that be turn up and just say to Magneto, "We're giving you dominion over Genosha to be a mutant nation." And so that's how he ends up running the ship. And then, to be fair, not long after, something very similar happens to Genosha that happened in this episode.
Is that what a mutant massacre is?
Mutant, maybe? Because you've also got, I guess that is a mutant massacre, right? Because they're actually dead, as opposed to what the Scarlet Witch did with no more mutants, which is just taking away their powers.
Yeah. Anyway, the city was awesome. Everything was awesome there. I think everyone's going to have the same best scene out of this episode. One thing but what's your second?
Well,
has anyone got a second best scene from this? Because I've definitely got one.
Look, there were so many good ones. You talked about I obviously reveled in the Trish Tilby interview, and I actually gained a little respect for Scott when he stormed out, his little speech before he storms out. I reveled in, like turned a little bit, really? You know, into badass.
I think he had a couple of good moments.
But you mentioned the stakes being high, Sean, but specifically talking about the deaths and et cetera. But I thought a great underlying part, well, it wasn't really underlying, was the love triangle. The Gambit, Rogue, Magneto, specifically seen through Rogue's eyes, and, you know, her trying to explain. I really thought that scene was fantastic with when she's going back to when she first met Magneto and explaining to Remy why she is, you know, why she's making this decision, basically. Where it starts on the plane at the start, where him and Gambit are kind of, Magneto and Gambit are kind of playfully like jibing with each other, and then the stakes just get cranked right up when Magneto wants her to be the queen, culminating in the fight scene. I thought it was just fantastic.
For all those reasons, my second favorite scene was Rogue's entrance to the gala, when she like comes flying down to what I can only assume is that what you call electronica music?
That song that plays is Ace of Base, Happy Nation.
What?
And they're doing their, well, I've got a note here saying this dance scene is too sexy.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
A couple of things I was thinking about the Rogue situation. It reminds me of a conversation we had before about the Scott, Jean and Madeline thing, where we talked about people online like getting mad about certain shit and going like, you cannot put yourself in this situation to try and think about what you'd do. Like people getting mad at like Rogue for choosing Magneto, even if it's only temporarily or whatever. And it's like, you don't know what it's like. You've got no idea what it's like to never touch anyone.
She touched Magneto, all right.
I don't know. Some of those people in the comment section probably got a pretty good idea of what it's like to not touch anyone.
Other things started happening while she was being drawn by Magneto biting her finger.
Oh. Although Wooshka. I've got one counter argument to that whole Rogue conundrum is, can't she just put one of those collars on and then touch whoever she wants?
What collar are you talking about, Sean?
They quite often use those.
Yeah, I don't think they can't go that far. Like, they've already pumped up the tires a bit because, you know, we're a bit older, but we're not going to go that far.
The inhibitor collars that stop mutants from being able to use their powers.
Is that what they're called? Fuck me.
What about a shot from the executioner?
Is it called? Is it called Genosha or Genosha? Because you're both calling it different.
I'm saying Genosha and I'm right.
I'm not sure which one I said. Did I say both of them?
I think you've said multiple.
Genosha.
Is that one of the characters in the second episode?
It doesn't matter. Let's move on.
Hold on. Body slide by one.
Anyway, that last scene of Gambit saving the day. Like I actually had quite a lot of notes for this episode, and they pretty much stopped from that scene. And I watched the episode either two or three times, and I still don't have notes for it because I had to watch the entire scene and couldn't take notes. Fucking awesome.
I think even leading up to that, this is Gambit's best episode by far. Like he's obviously jealous, but he's not. He actually isn't. Like he's a little bit of a dick at the start when he's bickering with Magneto, but he handles the rejection really, really well. But he also, like, he actually poses a few things throughout, you know, when they're talking about how expensive apples are, $10 or whatever, and he's, you know, like, maybe Gambit want to ask the questions that nobody else want to ask. You know, like, he's skeptical, and maybe, you know, when that was happening, I was going, okay, there's some sort of something seedy's going on, Genosha. But probably the only thing I don't like about this episode is we get to Genosha and it's amazing. And then at the end of the episode, it's gone. I would have liked to have spent more time there.
Yeah, agreed.
He outwardly says it, his skepticism to, what's his, Nightcrawler? Is it?
Mm.
Whatever the German guy is with three fingers. he's saying it out. It was a great little cameo from him. He outwardly says it. He's like, I can't touch you, basically. And Nightcrawler's just giggling away, saying how intense Americans are, pretty much.
It's a good glow up from the original season with Remy just being a massive creep for how many seasons there are of the original one to being the ultimate hero in this one, and what do I think is the best episode.
Yeah. A Gambit and, to a lesser extent, Rogue, in the initial iteration would never have been able to carry an episode. They carry the greatest episode.
The highest rated episode of the series so far on IMDb.
I loved the old hookup between Gene and Meg as well. That was fantastic. Missing noises as well was fantastic.
I forgot about that. Yeah, that was real funny as well. All the stuff that was happening back at the mansion was always just funny.
I watched this episode twice and fell for the Scott talking to Madeline on the astral plane twice. Like, both times I thought it was Gene, and then Gene storms in psychically, and I'm like, oh yeah, psychic affair, good stuff. There's a nice little nod to, in the comics, New X-Men run, Scott has a psychic affair with Emma Frost, the blonde lady from this episode, Sam, who's on the council. And there's a nice little nod to that when Madeline, like, pops out of her whatever she's doing with Scott, and she's like, sorry, my mind was somewhere else. And Emma's just like, like, she knows. She knows.
Speaking of which, the years have been generous to Moira. Moira McTaggart looks fantastic. And who's the guy who's with Moira who's got the worst accent?
And she.
God, go back and listen to that one line he says. It's awful.
I can't remember what Moira looks like, but judging by who normally your top picks are for 90s movies, is she like dressing real goth or something, which is real alternative?
She's definitely got a little Vicky alternative Valancourt side.
I mean, there's heaps of cameos in this episode. I'm going to stop listing cameos because I think that there's going to be cameos galore throughout this. I think that's part of the nostalgia bait. But I think, just interesting to note, there was a couple who are from post 99, so 2000s X-Men comics, which is quite cool.
No, it's not. We're a 90s podcast.
Sorry, apologies. Kick out Glob and Pixie immediately.
Who, that little green guy comes back? What's his name?
Leech.
Leech, yeah. What is Magneto's deal with the Morlocks? It's like, don't worry about anyone else in Genosha. Save the Morlocks.
I guess because when he saved them from the tunnels, he promised them that he'd protect them.
Weird.
They've had a rough time.
His sacrifice was excellent, and then completely overshadowed by Gambit.
Oh, good.
Well played, Gambit.
That bit. Oh.
Just going back to, I mentioned I thought Cyclops had another good moment. I think, again, this whole idea of, like, not being able to understand, like, Gene's chafed that he's psychically chatting to Madeline, which is fair, but also Jean's all over the place because her memories are not fully there or whatever. And I think he asks, you know, when they start having the argument, and she's like, your love is the only thing that I do remember. I thought his sort of comeback of, like, do you love me or am I a lovely memory? It was quite a good question. But then, of course, she semi-faints, so he's straight back to Gene.
There hasn't been a lot of June.
Does a figurine have a button or a pull string that says June?
I'm worried about what he's going to do with those hands that come off.
That's weird. That's weird.
Sorry, cut that out.
A couple other things, just back to, so what Pat alluded to before, Sam, is you have Genosha sort of end of the 90s, early 2000s, and then sort of the last, what, 4 or 5 years, you've had Krakoa as a mutant nation in the comics, and clearly pulling from that, I don't remember there ever been a Genoshan council, and a lot of people on the council were people who were on the Krakoan council, Sebastian Shaw, Emma Frost, Moira, Mags. So I think they're definitely playing with that idea as well. You mentioned second favorite scene before. I really enjoyed the when Val Cooper is at the gala and she's got a bone to pick with the mutants for making Magneto Chancellor. And Magneto goes, "But surely Genosha's right to self-govern will not only be protected, but cherished, as it is with all UN nations. Most other nations don't allow terrorists to be their leader. Yet so many allow their leaders to be terrorists." There's heaps of quite a lot of on the nose. Huh?
Who's Val Cooper?
She's that blonde UN lady who keeps popping up.
Ah, she sucks.
Yeah. Quite a lot of on the nose political commentary in these episodes, I think. Certainly in the next episode, there's heaps with your space mates, Sam.
Sorry, I just blanked that episode out.
But then, yeah, obviously, we get with Cable, we get Cable's appearance, and he's too late. And I wonder, with appearances from time travelers, you're always going to wonder, like, why did you appear then? Why not like half an hour earlier or a day earlier? But maybe there's a reason for it. Something that'll mean nothing to you, Sam, but something to you, Pat, and something to the nerds was a very brief appearance from the Watcher. He's like a big bald-headed man in the sky.
I watched it twice. Still missed it. You texted me about it the first time around. Was it the was it the What If Watcher? A Watcher?
Looks like him. Yeah. So basically, in a nutshell, Sam, the Watch. There's this race of aliens called the Watchers or whatever, and there's one who watches over our galaxy or Earth or whatever, and they're called Watchers because they're sworn not to interfere, but they often pop up when something's about to happen that's not supposed to happen, and very bad at their jobs because over the 100 years or not quite 100 years of Marvel publication, they've interfered quite a lot.
Yeah, tough job.
Yeah. The one in the other Marvel animated show, What If, is voiced by, who is it?
The guy from Westworld. What's his name?
Yeah, Westworld. He plays Bernard on Westworld.
Yeah.
He's real good as well. I wish I could remember his name, but oh well. Anyway, is there anything else that I really here. Want? I enjoyed all the Magneto is Right posters, a reference to something nerds say online. I reckon the animation, sound, and action of that final scene is like the best action scene I've seen in a cartoon.
Yep.
The music, everything. And by far, Gambit's best moment ever. And nerds will be saying forever, "The name's Gambit, mon ami. Remember it. Which
I think I like the lead up to that though was with the Gambit, see your bet and raise it.
Because the cards always be in my favor.
Just amazing.
Great stuff. It's great stuff.
Yeah, it's the best episode I've seen. He has heaps of great quotes, right? What is he saying?
My final.
Never been much for a roulette. Your final note? No.
My final note, like, was just after that was, they might as well not make an X-Men movie for a long time now, because this was too good. Mm. This episode was like the best X-Men thing I'd seen on TV or movie, I reckon.
Wow.
Mm. Any thoughts from you, Sam?
I think it's a question just about the episode, but also just, I ask this pretty much every time. How much of this is canon? How much of this has happened?
The Sentinel attack on Genosha is probably known as the greatest mutant tragedy in comic books.
You had an idea that this could potentially come up in this season?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's, yeah, at some point. It's like an early 2000s thing.
Does Gambit die in that iteration in the comic books?
Does who die?
Gambit.
Nah.
Okay. So there are a few artistic liberties then.
Definitely. I think like they've done most, maybe save for the Dark Phoenix stuff, which was very close to what happened in the comic books. They always tweak it a little bit to suit the need. I guess just mentioning, like, we'll talk about Magneto, because as we find out later, perhaps not as permanent as a death as we'd thought, but Gambit, Banshee, Callisto, the leader of the Morlocks, have we seen Val Cooper yet? Quite a few, like, it's assumed at this point that Madeline Pryor is dead. Like, just a lot of characters taken off the board. That was really, really good, that episode.
Right, so Bright Eyes.
Do you want to talk about X-Men in space? I know, there's two issues with this. The Shi'ar suck. And I would have been so happy just to go a whole season without Professor X.
I reckon if we went back to our previous, what we used to talk about, first iteration, you liked Shi'ar.
I didn't mind.
I liked Shi'ar.
Tied to the Phoenix.
Give him some collars.
I like the Shi'ar. I just like how they're real fancy.
Chuck loves him some space snatcher.
Ooh, and he's got
some creepy lines in this.
And he's got his walkie legs.
He's got that special suit, doesn't he? But he says something. Your man speaks as if I am your pet. Not an entirely displeasing thought. Gross.
Hey, Bob, can
him
you
and his missus have weird, real weird yarns as well. Like. Mm-hmm. There's one part when she's trying to say he shouldn't have his X-Men family in his life, and she describes him as a black hole. And his response to that is real funny. It's like, didn't your brother try to destroy the universe with the Imkron crystal? Jenna kind of flicks over it. Her reaction's kind of nonchalant as well. It's almost like she might as well have just gone, what are you bringing up old shit for?
Bob, can you give us like the 45-second synopsis? Because I tuned out for most of this episode.
Yeah. So the most important things to note is that Magneto and Gambit aren't in the opening credits, but Nightcrawler is. And there's quite a few shots of from the Days of Future Past and of Nimrod, that real weird white and pink Sentinel. I think that's important. So Professor, 45 seconds. What's her name? What's his missus' name? Lalandra. The prof, her king or emperor or whatever, and the Shi'ar have really, really lack of respect for Terrans, people from Earth, and Deathbird's about, and she challenges him to prove his loyalty by letting Lalandra wipe his memory of the X-Men, which I was campaigning for. he gives a lesson to the Shi'ar on, I think basically because it's made really, really on the nose apparent here that the Shi'ar are just massive galactic colonialists. There's a bit where Lalandra says something about, once we crush the Kree, you can educate them in our ways. Sound like a missionary. And then 30 seconds later in the same conversation, when he's talking about wanting to see the X-Men, his family, she says, the virtue of a teacher lies in showing the students how to walk on their own. I'm like, doesn't sound like what the Shi'ar do. Sounds like you teach them how to walk your way or not at all.
And he can't walk.
He can in his exosuit, which I think he's wearing because the Shi'ar would think little of him if they knew he couldn't walk. That was the impression I got. Anyway, here's a weird vision of Gambit dying or whatever and decides he needs to go back to Earth. So, fuck. Anyway, the more interesting stuff is definitely what Life Death Part 2 is supposed to be about, and that's Storm and Forge and the demon.
Fuck, I forgot that was part of this episode.
This was trippy as hell.
Yeah, it was meant. I certainly like the part where the demon's cornering Storm and Forge is on his deathbed, but he musters up enough strength to get his magic book out. Lord of Chaos, Weaver of Lies, I tear your thread and break your loom. Depart to the desert, demon. Depart and be gone. But nice to see Forge using some magic. He's, you know, a line of shaman, even though he's more of a builder.
Have we seen the demon before?
Only in that last episode. And in that 10-minute life death we got, that was way better than Motendo. Ugh.
So Deathbird, Lalandra are sisters, and Daken is their brother. Okay. Good. Drawing my family tree
Speaking of family trees, there's a blink and you'll miss it cameo from the long lost third Summer's brother in space.
That doesn't care unless it's Cannonball.
Exactly. I'm going to tell you, Sam, because it's bizarre. Because you remember Scott's brother, Alex, from that Iceman episode? They don't know their brothers? Yeah,
vaguely.
So when Corsair, his father, and their mother are going down in a plane crash, the plane gets captured by aliens, and that's how Corsair ends up in space. And in the comic books, at least, she's pregnant with a third child. And the Shi'ar, or whoever capture them, they kill her or she's dying, they extract the baby from the womb and grow it in a test tube, and it becomes a character named Vulcan who's incredibly unstable, but incredibly powerful.
Who was the red beast that was floating around in space? Gladiator? Did I search it up?
With the mohawk?
Oh, with the big mohawk? Yeah.
Who was like invincible, like taking all the hits and...
He's like Space Superman.
He was in some of the original...
Yeah, he like uppercuts Juggernaut across the the British Canal or something.
I'll just say, there's a lot said about how weird Scott and Jean and I suppose Madeline Pryor's relationship is, but I actually thought this all the Shi'ar stuff was really funny. I wasn't taking it as seriously as you guys. And pick up on all of that stuff. I just kept laughing at how weird their yarns and stuff were. Like even when Deathbird comes up with that challenge that Chuck has to have his memory wiped to prove his loyalty to the Shi'ar, and Lalandra thinks she's sticking up to him by going, it's like, well, he's a talented telepath. You're not going to be able to do that. It's like, that's... It's not the reason you shouldn't do it. Not because you can't, but it is a gut for Chuck.
It's such a weird duo, the Chuck Lalandra. I was just like, this doesn't make sense to me, but I'll go with it.
Mind you, it's Chuck, you know. He's a piece of work.
He sucks.
He sucks.
Yeah.
I guess in a nutshell, back to life, death, which was Mint. Not much to say, though. Storm, obviously. I noticed the second time round that the demon is also being voiced by the same character as Storm, so it's obviously some sort of reflection of her. I certainly love the scene where she gets her powers back and she's wearing her old original costume and she shouts out as she does, "So let them thunder, for I am lightning." You know, and she does her thing and gets her powers back, saves Forge with the special cactus, although Forge calls it a cacti, even though that's the plural for cactus.
I've just got Storm shit year, and I don't know whether that's referring to that scene or another scene that I particularly enjoyed, but that scene and the space classroom with Chuck holding court, that was bizarre and awesome.
Yeah, I didn't really understand it, what the fuck was going on with that. Because then when he gets knocked out, they're all kind of in a weird room. It's like, did they agree for Chuck to do that? It's like, oh, can you do like your weird telepath stuff? And like, we'll be in a classroom, we'll sit down. This will be the best way to do this meeting.
It was so weird, but so funny.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot, like a lot of that sort of stuff. All the stuff with the adversary was obviously quite out there. And then, yeah, that classroom scene's quite out there, but not not off the mark from the original series. There was some pretty trippy stuff with, like, the, I don't know, there was like the scenes when Chuck is trying to get through to Sabretooth. Remember that? And he's like, flying around in those boxes and stuff.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of that sort of stuff.
There's quite a good part where Deathbird starts having a crack at him and he like makes her sit at her desk with his mental powers. Like straps her in. I really like the imagery of when he starts to realize the X-Men are under pressure or whatever, and Gambit appears and it turns into a skeleton with his red eyes shining through.
I thought you would have liked when he called them his children of the Atom.
I did like that. I did like that. Also, speaking of that, Tilby referenced their origins, whether they come from the nuclear age or simple genetic... what's the word?
Mutation.
Yeah, but she talks about evolution. Because originally the idea was that they became about because of the nuclear age messing with people's genes, but now they've had to retcon that because there's so many mutants who are older than nuclear weapons. But yeah, should we get into Bright Eyes?
Yeah, we said too many nice things about that last episode.
Yeah. My first note about that, other than acknowledging Magneto and Gambit, Nightcrawler and the credits stuff, my first note was, can't wait for Sam's thoughts on being back in space.
I was my first, thinking that the entire time.
My first sentence was two words and it just said, fucking space.
I hope they go back to space.
There's too much to happen in the next three episodes, I think. This episode, there's a lot going on.
I got confused.
Opens with Gambit's funeral. Nightcrawler being a priest. Wonder if he's ordained or he's just doing it. But I forgot that Nightcrawler's first episode in the original series, it was like Gambit, Meg, and Rogue that were over there. So he obviously actually knew Gambit better than I had remembered. And then Rogue's rampage on the US military site it's all good stuff. I didn't know this, but lots of people online were getting really excited about the big kick she does, being a move from the Marvel Capcom games. And then we get like an array of unexpected cameos. General Ross being an antagonist from the Hulk comic books. And I think he makes a Hulk reference. And obviously then Captain America, last time we saw him was in a Meg flashback. And I don't know how I feel about Avengers being part of this world.
I got confused. I was like, what's going on here? Why is Captain America in this episode?
It's hard to justify going, all of a sudden Captain America's around. Where was he the last 5 years of the series? Other than that flashback, you know, if you're going to start incorporating the other Marvel characters, it's, you know, where have they been? But yeah, he's there. That's certainly one that'll get the nerds excited. Yeah, there's so much happening. So Rogue finds Gyrich and tries to steal his memories or whatever, and there's a flash of Nimrod. I said I thought Nimrod might be important. That white and pink future sentinel. The X-Men go to Genosha to help with the cleanup, and they find Emma, who survived because she has developed her secondary mutation, which is turning into diamond form. You get a bit of the Jubilee and Sunspot side story, which I don't really care about, but I still kind of like Sunspot. And then we get introduced to Bastion, who's that sentinel-looking human fella. And he kills Gyrich, so, okay. Then we head over to Madripoor, which is a big deal in X-Men lore. Wolverine likes to hang out there. There's lots of references to OZT, and I kept trying to remember what that could possibly stand for, and I'm pretty sure it stands for Operation Zero Tolerance, which we can talk about in a little bit. Rogue kills Trask, only for him to turn into some sort of cyborg zombie sentinel. And he wipes the floor with him. Cable turns up and wipes the floor with him. And then we have a scene of Bastion, who has Magneto captive. Thoughts, please.
My main point goes right towards the end when Bastion shows up, and he's voiced by none other than the guy that snorts Jay's poo on the Inbetweeners movie. He comes out the bathroom with a shit hanging out of his nose. So that was bloody exciting.
Did you recognize his voice, or did you have to look that up?
I recognize it because I also just finished The Gentleman
Snorting Shit.
He's the main guy of that.
So hang on. Bastion. So he kills Henry Gyrich. Is that who that guy is?
Yep.
I originally thought that was Magneto. I was real confused. And then is it him and Sinister at the end of the episode together?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
I thought it was really good, especially the end of the episode. Rogue's revenge tour was awesome. I obviously love Rogue. But she hits new levels in this episode.
I really liked it when she threw Captain America's shield into the mountains. It's a real good.
It was like the most nice petty shield thing you can do, eh? Oh, you like the shield? Oh.
It's real good. It's like kicking someone's ball away if they're like, not, don't let you play.
It's a shame that Trask turned straight into a sentinel zombie, because kind of takes a little bit of the weight away from the fact that Rogue killed him. That's obviously a line that they're not supposed to cross. But yeah, I thought that was pretty mint to let her go all out. So clearly this is setting up Operation Zero Tolerance. In the comics, I won't talk about Bastion's origin, A, because it's bizarre, but B, they might tell us it anyway. But he sort of works his way into government scenes and leads Operation Zero Tolerance, which is basically like the mutant registration stuff on steroids, basically just no more mutants sort of stuff. He's also, yeah, he's quite formidable. It's because of his backstory, so I won't say why, but yeah. But what's really interesting is Operation Zero Tolerance is like a mid to late 90s X-Men storyline that is not very well loved.
Really?
But I mean, I think they can make with it whatever they want, and it'll probably be good because of how good the story's been thus far anyway.
Hey, what one question. So there was a scene where there was basically a cameo of Quicksilver using all his Quicksilver's powers. Was that Morph?
That was Morph.
So Morph can also use everyone's powers?
Only if they're like physical powers. So you can't like make, like he can't turn into Cyclops and do eye beams.
Yeah.
But he can turn into Wolverine and have the claws, or, you know, turn into Blob and be bouncy, or
smelling powers as well.
Morph's awesome.
I was thinking in this episode, Morph is just so good. Just he is. They've done really good things with Morph.
Yeah, yeah, and you know that Morph and Meg spinoff got to be coming out shortly. Just them hanging out at. I reckon what the spinoff should be is Meg and Morph by Bad Guy Bar, and it's, you know, it's kind of like a roadhouse situation. They're gonna like, you know, clean up all the riffraff.
I reckon they run Bad Guy Bar, but they've got two really different ways of running it, and Morph like is real reckless with like giving away free, like basically running Bad Guy Bar into the ground, and Meg has to like pull him into line.
This writes itself. They have an episode where they like put a tape down the middle of the bar and they split it in two to see who runs it better. Yeah. We could write this.
It kind of sounds like a Saturday night at the Petone Cricket Club.
I look, Tracy Trivia. I don't even know if you probably know this already, but I was listening to Rogue and I revel in her voice, and it sounds a lot like Spinelli from Recess. Another episode that we did recently, which was fantastic, which you should go back and listen to. We may have something in the pipeline regarding Recess Part 2. But and so I thought it was the same voice actor who's quite famous, but it's not. You know who voices Rogue?
I know the...
isn't it some like politician? Isn't she like a politician now or something?
Yeah, and yeah. I think now currently not a member of the Canadian Parliament, but an ex-politician. I was like, this is outrageous.
I did not know that she was a politician, and I've known that because she's been quite prevalent on the press tour of the show.
Of course she has, bloody politicians.
I did not know that. That's almost as bizarre as when Kane was getting into politics of WWE fame.
I got one more thing.
It
is quite clear now that they are leaning into the more of a adult, risky, you know, there's a lot more romance, obviously, with the deaths. Is this the first episode that is rated M?
I don't know. We'll wait to see that episode Bob was talking about with the collars.
I don't think I saw that one.
You're right, you're really.
But it's definitely the only one from this series that's M.
Interesting.
And that really stood out to me that they're basically cutting the child. Well, they're not cutting it, but they're leaning into the old X-Men fans and not really pushing for new ones. Maybe that's why they're adding in Captain America, is trying to get some people that way, or I don't know.
Because the thing is, if I'd seen Captain America in this show when I was watching it as a kid, I would have fizzed. But I'm not that. Like,
I think they're just like reminding everyone that they can all be part of the same universe before they put them all in the movies.
And I wonder if potentially they're going, there is an animated shared universe that could be born out of this popularity, because there's already a number of 90s shows that are nowhere near as good as X-Men, like Iron Man, Hulk, Fantastic Four. Maybe they're going, well, this is, they've already greenlit season 2 and season 3 for this, but maybe they're going, maybe we can do a Avengers version or a Fantastic Four version or whatever, but I don't really care for it. There's one other thing I was going to say, I think. But it escapes me, so who cares? Oh, no, that's it. So clearly they're going, there was talk in this episode of not letting Genosian mutants go back to their home countries and stuff like that. So they're clearly trying to go back to mutants being disliked, having opened the thing with mutants being popular and Genosha and all that sort of stuff. And I'm like, this is the massive issue with comic books. They always have to go back to the status quo. So the X-Men always have to go back to being hated and feared for being different, or whatever the catchphrase is. And I don't like that. I would rather have seen the continued progression. I would rather them try and rebuild Genosha than just, you know, get into season 2 and, oh, things are worse than ever for the X-Men. And, you know, like, I'd rather see them try and push it into something new with the characters we love and the ideas we love, but something slightly different than just, like, you know, Sentinels and, you know, whatever, that same thing.
Maybe then they can't then rehash the storylines from the comic books, which is kind of what they have to do, really. They need to lean into that. And at the heart of a lot of their storylines, I would assume, is that idea. Maybe not some of them. Like, I know you mentioned one about where Apocalypse rules the world. Potentially not that one. But
Age of Apocalypse, yeah, that's so mint. We need that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming we go from here to our old mate Chuck coming back to Earth and ruining everything.
Fuck.
You know what's a great thing about the Age of Apocalypse, Sam? It Chuck's started dead. Because Chuck's dead.
Well, I thought he was fucking dead already, but here we go.
I hope Lalandra comes back with him.
I don't. What's Deathbird's actual name? Kelsey.
I love an apocryphy in the Shi'ar. Yeah.
Right, you guys have got to do your sign-off.
Well, just quickly, so we've got 3 episodes to go, so we're going to watch all 3, and then we're going to finish this off during the Kelly House Mardi Gras, where me, Char, and Luke all have birthdays in the space of 4 days.
We try and watch one of these episodes together.
That'd be quite good. That guy messaged me a while ago about using that his facilities for a podcast, but I don't think you're running out of time, Pat.
I'm just more concerned that he's still chasing you up and it seems like he's trying to murder you. Maybe if you walk in and there's like plastic sheets everywhere, yeah, keep your
maybe he's on. Secretly one of the friends of humanity. All right. It's bedtime, boys. Mission accomplished, buddy.
Let's go home.